got a great film to play next.
Hello.
Have you ever snubbed a lady?
We had a technical problem.
Are we on?
Yeah. We're on there.
Can I swear? Shit!
Welcome to Crunch and Roll, a podcast about the side of the radio industry that most people never hear about, featuring some of its most interesting characters. My name is John Fox, and I've presented the Odd Breakfast Show here and there around the country over the last couple of decades, so I like to think I'm qualified to ask my guests the questions that we're all dying to hear the answers to. My guest today may have been the highest paid overnight guy in history. No wind-up. It's the brilliant Simon Logan. Now, I'm not going to make any apology for getting a Viking FM legend on this episode because there's a reason, wait, because the station where it all started for me, it celebrates its 40th anniversary on the Wednesday that this episode is released. It's a special week. Simon was who I listened to as a teenager on the way to college. I can remember it now with me kickers on and my really smart Alessi tracky top. Oh, I was the Don. His career might have spanned 31 years, but he only really has three stations on his CV: Viking, Radio Air, and BBC Radio Newcastle. But the stories in this episode, they come in thick and fast. Like how he made number 18 in the charts with his CD of wind-up phone calls, how a Radio 1 legend wanted to be his manager, and also how he ended up becoming the aforementioned highest paid overnight guy in the land. Oh, and after some of our previous guests have made some scurrilous accusations about his behaviour in earlier episodes, he demanded a right to reply. Well, we don't want to get sued, do we? Before we start, just our weekly reminder that if you enjoy this podcast, then please do support us. We'd be eternally grateful. Just head to Ko-fi, that is ko-fi.com/crunchandroll. And special thanks goes to Chris Merton, to Baz, just Baz, and also another Viking legend, Mr. Simon Green as well. Thank you very much for your recent support. Don't forget ko-fi.com/crunchandroll. Right, you ready? Let's crunch and roll.
Oh yeah.
Simon, how are you?
Do you know what? I'm really good. Nice to talk to you after about 15 years, perhaps, Foxy.
Simon, I think it's closer to 25.
Oh, it's not, is it?
I think it probably is, mate. Yeah,
oh, I hate that. When you're reminded of how long it's been since you did something, you know, a friend of mine, Mark Summers, you know Mark, don't you?
Yes, I love Mark.
He said to me, have I ever told you that when you were on at Viking, I used to sit on the wall opposite the marina and on my way back from school, I used to sit there and wait for you to come out so I could have your autograph. You know, there was no selfies or anything back in Stone Age times, Foxy. And I just thought, good grief, that makes me sound like Methuselah. You know, there he was dressed as a, well, not dressed as a schoolboy, that came later, but, you know, as a schoolboy asking, you know, and it's like, you kind of think, well, I did that as well at that age. But the time marches on, doesn't it? And here we are now, 2024, still going after 31 years. What on earth is that all about?
Well, do you know what? We've picked to put you on this Monday because, of course, and we're recording this before the Monday that you're on, obviously, but the weekend that's about to happen, but when people are listening to this on the day of release, it's just happened.
Yes.
But we wanted you on because over the weekend it was Viking FM's 40th anniversary.
Brilliant.
And it would be the same for Mark Summers as it is for myself. You were the person. I mean, look, we all talk about JK and Joel, how amazing they were. But it was you that I listened to going to college. You the person, you know, that I thought was incredible on that breakfast show. So that is why I'm calling you Viking royalty, Simon,
and that is why you
are my guest this week. How does that feel?
It feels extremely special. More of it, please. do you know, I started there in 1993, and it was my first gig on the radio. Before then, I'd been sort of DJing in nightclubs and ferries, cruise ships and stuff like that, and holiday parks. And all I wanted to do was be on the radio. So when I finally got that gig at the age of 25... I was like a dog with, you know, a couple of them. And there was, it was just amazing people that were there. Phil White was the chap that gave me the job. I'd sent a demo when you had to put a cassette into an envelope, Foxy, and send it. And, you know, he said he'd sent me a letter back, and it came to the ferry ship that I was working on in Scandinavia or somewhere. And so I was in the mess one day, and someone said, "Hey, there's been a letter here for you for the last 2 weeks." I was like, "Oh, how's that?" Didn't know that you could even receive a letter. And there it was from Phil White inviting me to go there. So that was 1993. And yeah, 31 years ago. Just honestly gone like that. And some of the people that I met there along the way are still great friends now. Paul Bromley, Paul Carrington, I heard on Crunch and Roll. He was absolutely brilliant, still is. You know, these are people that are still friends all these years later. Mark Dennison, there was Mike Zeller and Derek Flood, and lots of people called Paul Saunders, or Apple Saunders, as we call it. Apple Saunders. You probably remember these people as well.
Well, I remember listening to many of them. Of course, you know, I know Paul Carrington, who's a legend as well. Let me just go right back. So where are you from, Simon? I don't even know where you were born.
Okay, so I was born in Chester, over in the northwest. And at the age of about 10, parents split up and we moved to a place called Southport, which is where I kind of grew up, you know. And I went to a public school, a boarding school, from like the age of 7 till I was about 12. And it was all very posh and la-di-da. And then when they split up and the money ran out, they shoved me in a comprehensive in Southport. So that was a bit of a, ooh, this is a different kind of thing going on here, you know. strange upbringing, but I, you know, had a great time. So Southport, people think that I'm from Leeds or, you know, Hull.
Yeah.
But I'm no, nothing to do with that at all. Just happened to get a job there. Never been on the radio in anywhere that I sort of grew up with, like Chester or Southport. It's always been, well, currently Newcastle, and before that Leeds and Hull.
So you didn't do hospital radio, you didn't do student radio, did you get into entertainment and DJing because the ultimate aim was to get on the radio, or did you become a DJ?
I just wanted to be on the radio. I did hospital radio in Southport.
Oh, you did?
From
the
age of 14. I just used to rock up a little precocious 14-year-old, you know, who thought he knew everything. I actually knew very little indeed. There are a few tapes remaining which prove that. So, yeah, I'd always wanted to do it, but it was notoriously difficult to get into. I really feel for, you know, people now who are trying to get into it, because, as we know, there's fewer and fewer jobs on the radio these days. But, yeah, I did it and lasted for 31 years, still going strong, hopefully.
So you're on a cruise ship, you get this letter.
Yeah.
You get off the ship and you go and have a meeting, and they offer you a job there and then to for your dream job.
They did. They said, "We want you to do Saturday evenings."
Right.
I was quite happy with that. It was a show called The Beat, which played all the hip and trendy dance songs of the era, like M&A and Bad Boys Inc.
Yes.
And and other such luminaries of the dance world. But I loved doing that, and you know, I got to meet pop stars and talk to them. I was like really, really happy doing that. And after a few months, they said, "We want to put you on Breakfast." What?
Really?
Well, I've only just started. Give me, you know, put me on the Breakfast Show, which, and then next thing, I was nominated for a Sony Award, and that's when it all kind of started. And It was so quick once I'd got it, you know. You spend all that time dreaming about what it could be like, Foxy. And then suddenly when you get the gig, it was amazing. And then to be catapulted onto to Breakfast on Viking, which I think I did for about 3 years, was just brilliant, really brilliant. Proud that we got the highest figures ever for the station. That was once the wind-ups came along. I think that was a kind of pivotal moment. I know it's nothing new, and, you know, Steve Penk was doing them over in Manchester and no doubt all around the country, but it was something kind of new back then. And that lifted it to a different level in my eyes.
I always remember being with my mum in a car, and we'd stop at a local garage in Hull and there'd be your cassettes on the side, the wind-up cassettes for sale.
There was the cassettes, and you could get them from Turnbull's newsagent, I think it was called. Does that still go? Is there still a Turnbull?
I don't know.
I don't know either. You could get them from that and from garages, and also from that big department store next to the Princess Quay called Alders.
Yeah, that's gone. That's definitely
that's
gone.
That's a KFC or some. That's a betting shop. Yes, so there was all that, and the cassettes came out, and then later the wind-ups came on a CD. I think we did about three of those, starting at Viking, and then when I moved to Radio Air. And I'll never forget one time, the lovely guy who was in charge of the sort of marketing and stuff came running into the studio. This is when I moved to Air. He came running in, very excited when I was doing the show. Have you seen this? Have you seen this? And he was clutching a copy of something called Music Week, which was a magazine that we used to scan for the charts. You know, remember when the charts were exciting and everyone kind of like looked to see what the new number one was and what the highest new entry was? And blow me, the wind-up CD had made it into the independent album chart. Now, I've got the thing on here.
That's amazing.
Here we are. New entry, 21st of November 1998. New entry at number 18, Greatest Wind-Ups, Simon Logan. Sandwiched in between The Divine Comedy and Ash. What on earth was that all about, you know? There's these trendy Britpop guys and me, like, you know, saying that your greenhouse is smashed down and you're going to have to pay for it.
Can we just stick with the wind-ups? Because I obviously remember listening to those and they were just hugely popular. And as you say, other people have done them and have been equally as successful as yourself. And I think in Viking in that period of time, people wouldn't have heard Penky doing it, wouldn't have heard others doing it. So it was unique to you.
Yeah, that's right.
It's what made you a star. But We tried to do them when we moved to 210 to do wind-ups. I think we called it the phone tap or something. I can't remember.
Yeah.
But we used to spend hours in the studio trying to get the... I mean, was it the same for you?
Oh. It became frustrating. It started off as being very exciting. And, you know, oh, we got a good one there. And then we soon discovered that the public actually liked to hear people getting very annoyed and shouting and swearing and, you know... We'd use the, in inverted commas, bleep machine when some poor woman was having a nervous breakdown because she was told that, you know, her TV was being repossessed and or some nonsense. But it became, I don't want to say victim of my own success, it sounds so pompous, but you'd ring people and they'd just go, oh, it's Logie, isn't it? And as you know, you can't just rock up and do them. You have to research each one to make it seem credible. You know, so it takes a long time to kind of piece it together. Yeah, is the person that's suggesting the wind-up kosher, or are they just being nasty to somebody? You need to find out all the details of friends, where they work, and, you know, it takes a while. And then suddenly, within 30 seconds, it's blown to smithereens, and the person goes, it's Logie, isn't it? Yeah, we listen to you every morning. Bye. So sometimes you'd sit there literally till about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, knowing that you haven't got anything for 8:10 the next morning. And of course, you're so tired. You know, you know from doing breakfast what it's like. I don't believe anyone ever gets used to getting up at that time of the morning, clamping on a pair of headphones and talking nonsense for 4 hours and not be affected by it. It's a strange thing, especially that early in the morning, isn't it, Foxy? So yeah, you used to get very frustrated, and towards the end I really wanted to stop doing them.
Yeah,
but my bosses were like, oh no, it's the one thing that, you know, people, oh cheers, that's the only thing that people like me for. Yeah. Being a nasty bastard on the phone, thanks a lot. Cheers, thanks for that. Thanks. I thought I had some sort of radio skill, but apparently not.
Do you know the other thing? You're talking about how hard it is to do a breakfast show, and of course I would wholeheartedly agree with that. But, you know, I've always worked with another guy, always done a double-headed breakfast show. You worked on your own.
Some of the time, but I had a great guy called Paul Bromley in the early days, who is still my best mate. And he used to come up with a load of great ideas, really silly stuff. You know, we'd have characters ringing from a sandwich shop in Grimsby called Me and the Wahahahive. And that was actually, yes, that was me on the phone, talking to myself on, talking to myself live to the pre-recorded phone thing. Then on Coronation Street, Deirdre had married Samir. So we had a thing called Deirdre and Samir, and it mainly the theme tune. Deirdre and Samir, Deirdre and Samir, Deirdre and Samir, Deirdre and Samir. And it was literally Deirdre and Samir talking nonsense. But people, isn't it funny? Sometimes the things that seem like throwaway moments are the things that people latch on to sometimes, yeah, you know.
He talks about the people that, you know, were on air, I'm doing Mids and doing Drive whilst you were doing Breakfast. I mean, some legendary presenters from Viking. But they were, I don't know how to put this in a polite way, they were a little bit older than you were. Was it difficult being the young kid on the block who just turned up, got breakfast within months, and, you know, you're surrounded by these true professionals and you know, I've forgotten about me.
I was like 24. I was like 24 and, you know, some of them were, you know, into their 40s. And now the tables have now turned and yeah, I'm the old bugger that won't go away. I used to get very nervous, especially when it was someone that I really rated on the air. I know that sounds silly because the very nature of doing the job is that you exude confidence, but that is an act. Certainly for me, a lot of the time, that was an act, you know. Yeah. I used to get very nervous around. I remember when I first went to Radio Air after Viking and Bruno Brooks was on after me. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is the guy who, for my money, was the best at doing the chart show. And I'm an absolute chart geek. You know, I do a retro chart show on a couple of stations now. I just love the charts. But there was Bruno, you know, talking to me as a peer, almost kind of thing. You know, Bruno Brooks. And we became really good friends. And he told me some amazing stories about Radio 1. I remember one time we got absolutely rat-assed in the hotel where Bruno was staying. We really got very drunk, and he said, "I want to be your manager." And I thought, God, Bruno Brooks is asking me if he can be my manager. And I remember telling my boss at the time, an Irish guy called John O'Hara. He said, "Well, you want to give 15% of your money to that? Beep. Why would you give it to him?" So in the end, I turned Bruno down. And I've regretted it ever since. So, Bruno, if you're listening and the offer is still available, mate, you know, I'm still all right. I can still string a sentence together. You probably wouldn't get me to do a wind-up, though. But no, seriously, I used to be in awe of some people, you know.
I was very much the same, though, Simon. I really was, you know, especially when I started at Viking. I walked into that room with people like yourself who, I mean, you'd gone by the time I was there, but people that I'd grown up listening to, and it's like, oh my God.
I know, and JK, yeah, suddenly you have strange to say something, don't you? It's kind of like, do I go in for the, hey mate, how are you? Even though you've never met them. But you kind of feel like you know them already because you've spent, you know, years listening to them. It's the most bizarre situation to suddenly be landed in.
It was a technical problem. You heard something on air you shouldn't have done.
Oh yeah.
Couple of things before we move on to Radio Air, Simon, which I think it's only right that you have a right to reply on something which I think you know what I'm going to say. There's a couple of people, guests that we've had on this pod, who have mentioned you, who love you, but always talk about you throwing something at a member of the team at 96.9 Viking FM, of course, the legendary Chris the Cleaner. Is that true, Simon Logan?
I'm laughing because I know it's not true. It's one of those stories that's been embellished over the years. And Joel always used to say it, and then someone else would hear it and add a bit more onto it. And then I heard Decker a few weeks ago on your Crunch and Roll podcast. He added a bit. He wasn't even there. He was doing Drive. What on earth are you on about? But I find it very funny because what actually happened was, I don't know, I probably messed up a link or something, or not back timed something correctly, or you know, things happen, don't they? And it was one of those, we used to have a big whiteboard in front of us. Commercial radio does, BBC doesn't, with all the kind of like, you know, talk up things. Don't forget tomorrow morning, Simon's giving away £100,000 or whatever, or, you know. And so I picked up this board rubber in a fit of frustration. I just threw it at the whiteboard. It ricocheted off the whiteboard and then tapped Chris the cleaner. I didn't throw anything at Chris the cleaner. I've never thrown anything at anybody, Foxy. Honestly, I really haven't. People must have thought I was a vile individual. Oh, there's the man that throws things at people in the studio. No, no. It went on the whiteboard. It ricocheted off and it hit poor old Chris the cleaner. And yeah, then everyone still talks about that. Things that aren't true that kind of get, you know. But I think it's great. What's that old thing? You know, better to be talked about than not be talked about. But if it was true, I'd be deeply ashamed and I wouldn't be talking to you about it now.
Oh, absolutely. You know, absolutely.
Like, horrific person throwing projectiles at people during live shows. No, but that's what happened. who can say they've not had a bit of a meltdown during a breakfast show?
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I mean, mine was every hour, but that's by the by. <isn't it? laughs> Every minute, actually, especially on a Friday. Get me out of here. What, though?
Were you a perfectionist, though, Simon? Or are you a perfectionist? I know you're not gone.
I think that probably people would say that I was. Because it's your name above the door, isn't it? And if something goes wrong, if you screw it up and you get taken off, then, you know, it's all very well for people to say, oh, it doesn't matter, it's only radio. Yeah, but it's my job. I want it to be right. I've cooled down a lot. I was a lot more kind of highly strung, I think, is a nice way of putting it. I think I'm a lot more laid back now, and stuff goes wrong, I'm just like, oh, well, stuff goes wrong. That's what happens in life, so why shouldn't it happen on the radio? But, yeah, perfectionist is a nice way of putting it. But, you know, I've never fallen out with anybody, and all these people are still friends, and we still talk, and so, yeah, but thanks for giving me the opportunity to reply to the board rubber. And sometimes it's a pen. Sometimes it's a pen.
Yes, it's changed.
It changes. It's like, how many things has this bloody man thrown? CDs, pens, board rubbers?
It does remind me, because there was something I did to Chris the Cleaner, which I really regret, but we were trying to do a break a world record, like all breakfast shows do.
What did you do?
I tried to eat as many Cornish pasties in an hour. I think it was Jackson's, the bakery, brought in about 400 Cornish pasties.
I bet they did.
And after one, I was pretty stuffed, and I thought, I've got another 399 to go here. And Chris came in and said, do you mind if I have one of those with my cup of tea? And I said, no, I'm trying to beat a world record here, even though there was still 397 left.
And you mean thing, Foxy Fancy, not giving the poor old cleaner a Cornish pasty. You know, I think that's worse than throwing a pen at somebody and kicking a radiator.
Before we get on to Radio Air, I mean, because of course, you know, we're just over the weekend from Viking's big 40th anniversary. What does Viking mean to you?
At that time, it was so special to get a job on the radio. And it was the people that actually made it. We all, most of us lived around the marina. You know, I heard Decca saying on Crunch and Roll that he didn't want to be able to see work from where he lived. I did. Especially the idea of getting up at, you know, 4:30, 5 o'clock was all the more appealing because it was about 2 minutes walk from my front door to the Viking front door. So, as you know, sleep. If I can get 10 minutes extra sleep just walking to work, it's got to be worth it. So there was this amazing sense of community. Derek Flood and his wife lived opposite me in those flats on the marina there. You know, later Mark Summers would move into, I think, the same flat, and Cameron as well, you know. And it was like a kind of little town of its own, only occupied by weird people off the radio. And I mean that in nice way.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. But we are all a little bit strange to a certain extent. So happy memories of
really
of
happy memories. I loved every moment of it. In fact, when I left and went to work in Leeds, at first I thought I've made a big mistake here, and I was terribly unhappy for about a month or so. Because I'd gone from this tremendous community where the office was the pub, the DMP, you know, we just used to be in there all the time. It didn't really feel like work. We knew it was work and we knew there was a job to be done, but in a way it didn't. And I went from that tremendous kind of sense of security and friendship to a city that I didn't know at all. I didn't know any of the people there. I soon found out that you couldn't pick up the radio station in half of Leeds. I remember being in the car park at Radio Air, sitting there feeling thoroughly miserable one morning, thinking I'd made a mistake. I should have stayed in Hull. What the bloody hell was I thinking of? And I put the radio on and you couldn't pick up the station in the car park. You could pick up Hallam and Viking. They were blasting out. But the station where you were actually parked in the car park of was not to be heard. It was very odd, and it took me a while to adjust to it. Luckily, I did, and went on to have a blast. But at first, I hated it, Foxy. I really did.
Do you know, it's interesting, because a lot of people like yourself who aren't from Leeds, who then go to move to Leeds, they end up falling in love with the city. Yeah. Is that the same for you?
Definitely. At that time as well, you know, there was so much going on, and you know, I was younger. You know, I used to go and do nightclub gigs where I didn't actually play any records at all, because Joel would probably make the mix for me. Stick this on, they'll never know, Logie. Just put their headphones on and pretend you're mixing, which is fine until the CD starts skipping and 500 people realise you've been a total fraud. We've all been there, haven't we?
Yeah, we have. We have. I've done that in Bridlington.
Up, mate,
yeah,
don't you worry. Yeah, but no, it was great. So I'm glad that I stuck at it, and you know, it became a good success. I used to get very nervous presenting Party in the Park, which was a huge gig with the pop stars of the day, in front of about 70,000 people, because it was free. You know, and you used to do them, didn't you? With Tom, you used to do them, things like that. I used to get very, very nervous. They were very fraught, ill-prepared things, but people loved them. But I hated them. Put me in a dark room where no one's looking at me, I'm fine. But put me in front of 70,000 people, no. But again, you know, looking back, I'm glad that I did it, because, you know, I remember hosting it one year with Mel B. Who gets to do that? I've got a video of me hosting with Mel B.
I do want to talk about Radio Air, because, of course, you go there to do breakfast and you kind of go on and off breakfast, don't you? So you go there to do breakfast, then you get taken off breakfast.
Yeah.
And it was very well known that you were allegedly the highest paid overnight guy in the world.
Well, I don't know whether that's true or not. It's bizarre, because that happened to me at Viking as well. They took me off breakfast and put me on mid-mornings. Whoever then did breakfast, it kind of didn't work out for them. So they put me back on it. Then, you know, bugger me, it happened again at Radio Air. Suddenly, after my show on a Friday, you know, I was, Simon, have you got 5 minutes? You know, you walk into a meeting room and there's the firing squad with their clipboards, HR, you know, all looking very earnestly at you. And you think, oh, no, what have I done wrong? And Simon, you've just done your last show. What? But I've just done a really good show. It's Friday. That was your last show. What? We can offer you one of two things. We can offer you to do the late night show on TFM. Well, I just bought a house in Leeds and I didn't particularly want to go to Stockton or drive there. So we can offer you TFM, late night talking or something. Or we can offer you overnights. The reason for this is I still had like 2 years left on my contract, so they couldn't get rid of me, you know. And they said, I'm sure you don't want to do overnights. No, it's been a shock for you, Simon. So we're going to give you a week to think about it. We'll reconvene in a week's time. Get back to us. So took the week feeling very sorry for myself. Oh, you know, what's going on? What am I going to do? I don't want to do a talk show on TFM, really. I don't want to be going to work at 1:30 in the morning either. So in the end, I thought, be sensible here. And I went in and I said, I've been thinking about your current offer and I'd really, really love to take you up on it. And they thought I was going to say, do the talk show. I said, I'm really looking forward to the possibility of doing overnights. And their faces, they were just like, what? We're going to have to pay this guy $80,000 to do, to do overnights. It wasn't $80,000. I think it was $85,000. No, so I did overnights for a year. And then that people said, well, that's doing really well. And Ditchy, who took over from me, who's a super guy. I remember him driving in to do his first breakfast show. He said, I've just been listening to you on the way in. He said, what are you doing on overnight? I said, I've got no idea. He said, well, you're far better than me. And bearing in mind, about 3 months previous to this, I'd just been nominated for the best breakfast show in the UK.
Oh, you're kidding me.
No, it was that curse of the Sonys thing that people talk about, which I always thought was a load of nonsense. It was back in the day when all the breakfast shows were lumped together. So, you know, you wouldn't have like a local breakfast show. It was just best breakfast show. And you'd be up against Zoe Ball, who was, you know, on Radio 1 at the time, or Chris Tarrant or whoever. And I remember going there to this Sony Awards, nominated in this category. And Dee Ford, who was in charge, I don't know whether she still is anymore, I've lost touch. She was there. My mum was invited. Oh, Simon's great. Every time you turn on the radio, it's like a ray of sunshine. Three months later, I was doing overnight. Couldn't tell you why. I still don't know to this day why there was this sudden turnabout. But, you know, that's what happens, isn't it?
Sorry, did you actually take your mum with you?
Yes, I did. Mum was invited to the Radio Air one, which was the second one for Best Breakfast Show. And that was when Zoe Ball was with Norman Cook. And bless her heart, and I still don't know to this day how on earth she knew who I was. She came up to me in the Grosvenor House Hotel. And I was just talking to, you know, some friends or colleagues or whatever. And she came up and she said, Simon, I just wanted to wish you all the best. I actually made a point of listening to you. And this is Zoe Ball from Radio 1. And I just thought, what a terrifically kind, generous thing to do. You know, she didn't know me from Adam, but she came up and found me and wished me luck in the category that she was also nominated for. It was later that... isn't it funny, the toilets always seem to figure in conversations about the Sony Awards. I was coming to, and I was coming out of the gents, and you know, hold the door open for the person that's coming in, and it was Steve Wright, and he just went, "Oh, cheers, fella, thanks for that," and just carried on walking. And I thought, "Oh, Steve Wright's just said thanks for me holding the door open." Then there's a very windy kind of grand staircase on the other level. And as I was coming down the staircase, there was a very old figure at the bottom with a zipper frame who was struggling to get up the stairs to obviously also go to the lavatory. It was Alan Fluff Freeman. And I said, Alan, do you want a hand there? That's a very common thing. That's Australian. He wasn't Australian, was he? Let me do that again. That's a kind thing to say, mate. I still can't do it. All right, not off. Help me up the stairs. There's a good. He said, "You're a good lad, aren't you?" So yeah, holding the door open for Steve Wright and then seeing and helping Fluff up the stairs.
That could be taken in the wrong way as well. That Simon, what? Taking the Fluff upstairs. But,
well, there's nothing wrong with the commission. Testing. The dealer does not work.
Cold in here.
Well, I'm all for being open-minded, but I'm not all for discussing this live on air. Thank you.
We are profoundly sorry.
Oh, yeah.
You then get put back on breakfast, though, don't you, Simon?
Yeah, I did. Oh, God, it's so confusing. I think I did. Then I did mid morning. I can't remember. I did something for about a year, and then they said I was on holiday, and my partner. I was in the shower, and my partner said, "There's been a phone call. I answer your phone. Phone call from someone. They want to know if you can ring them back." And they knew I was on holiday, and I just thought, God, I bet the buggers want me to go back on breakfast. So I rang them back, and they said, "Please, can you come back on breakfast?" By this time, I was an old hand at saying, "Oh, yes, of course I can, yeah. How much more are you paying me?" Because suddenly you find yourself in the driver's seat, don't you, John? You're just kind of like, oh, right, you want me back, but you've messed me around. I'm going to make you pay for this in a nice way. So I went back and I loved it, and it was very successful. And we sold even more wind-up CDs and stuff like that. It was crazy times, crazy times. But I'm glad that I did it. And all in all, I must have spent about 12 or 13 years doing breakfast and, you know, a couple of other years doing overnights and mid-mornings. Now at the age of 55, I'm not really sure what's next on the horizon. Perhaps it's time for me to take a breather. Get him off.
There must be car boot sales in Leeds in Hull where you can probably still get a hold of some of your wind-up tape, Simon, I reckon. If you look in those bins somewhere.
I've got a garage full, mate. I don't need to go to car boot sales. Do you want one? I'll sign it for you. Only $4.99. Only $4.99. I'll send you one.
Please do. That would be incredible. Please.
I was listening to them the other day because I knew that you'd kindly asked me to do this. And I thought, I'm going to listen to some of these wind-ups. And the ones that have survived the most are not really the ones where people were getting very angry and sweary. It was more the kind of the daft ones, like when I'd interview, I don't know, there's one springs to mind. Do you remember Catchphrase with Roy Walker?
Yes, of course.
So he came on for an interview, but I pretended that I was not me and I was, you know, a junior helper or something. And I was called Gary and, sorry, Roy, Simon can't do the interview, but he's asked me to ask you the question so he could put his voice in afterwards, which immediately, you know, puts anyone's back up. The fact that you can't be bothered to turn up to do the interview and then put the questions in afterwards. But the whole thing was that this Gary character, who was me, actually thought he was interviewing Les Dennis. So the first few questions, they made perfect sense for Les Dennis and for Roy Walker. Yeah. But eventually they started, you know, becoming nonsensical. You know, tell me what it's like when the families fall out on Family Fortunes, Roy. I don't do Family Fortunes. And in the end, he was a great sport because in the end, he said, "You're asking me questions about Les Dennis?" He said, "Do you know who I am? Perhaps you'd like to call me back when you've realised what shows I present on the TV." And then when I said to him that it was, you know, phone prank, I said, "Did you enjoy it, Roy?" He said, "Well, I don't really know. I mean, I wouldn't really like to say." Which was Les Dennis's catchphrase.
Yeah.
I love stupid things like that. How many song titles could you get into a conversation without someone saying, "Why have you said the name of every Queen or ABBA song?" You know, working them into the conversation. I love those ones.
I had to get Tom to do the wind-ups because I just could. I think you have to be a certain type of person to do them because I end up. I either halfway through I'd go, "Oh shit, I'm so sorry, it's Foxy here from so and so," or because I couldn't cope with it. Did you do that? How do people do that like yourself?
Well, what you have to do is throw a few board rubbers at cleaners, and that gets you, that gets you in the mood. Then when you've seen Joel Ross come in just wearing a bin bag and nothing else, it kind of like sets you on the trajectory. I don't know how I did it. And sometimes I was incredibly, I felt really bad that, because you're essentially cold calling someone that could have just be having the worst day of their life. You know, they could have had a death in the family or something. And there's you saying that their ceilings collapsed. And sometimes, you know, they went horribly wrong. And you know, there was one guy that started having a heart attack. And my bosses was like, oh, we've got to play that one. We've got to play that one. I said, I'm not putting out a guy that's having a heart attack because I've got him so wound up. Yeah, but it'll be Radio Gold. Ring him up and say we'll give him some free CDs. Yeah, because that's going to swing it, isn't it? Yeah, that's going to swing it. So I don't think we put that one out. But no, sometimes they erred on, I don't know, maybe being a little bit nasty. And certainly not the sort of material that you'd want to present these days. Some of them were great, but looking back, some of them really haven't aged too well.
You talk about John O'Hara there, somebody who I know, John O'Hara, you know, and a few people have mentioned him as a boss. How was he for you?
He's an absolutely brilliant guy. And what I like about him, the best quality that any boss can have, I think, is he was honest. You know, if he didn't like something, he'd say, what the fuck was that attempt I say? Why did you say that? And you knew exactly where you were rather than, you know, someone sort of pussyfooting around. I mean, John Myers was, I never worked with John Myers, but I know plenty of people who did. I only became friends with him because he was in Newcastle. I used to listen to the show and send nice tweets. But people used to say the same thing that I thought about someone like John. You knew exactly where you were. Yeah, sometimes you didn't like it. Sometimes, you know, the old ego takes a bit of a bruising, but most of the time he was right. Someone like Andrew Robson as well, who's still a great friend. You know, these are the sort of people, when you look back, you realise have been pivotal in your career. And without these people taking a sort of chance on you and being honest to you, you know, perhaps I wouldn't be doing this anymore.
You mentioned Andy Robson there, who was my first ever boss. And I've mentioned many a time that my ambition was that he actually spoke to me.
Yeah, a man of few words.
Yeah, he never spoke to me once.
How could he be your boss and not speak to you?
He got Stuart Baldwin, who is the assistant PD, to do all the communications. Very crafty. But then when I was at the BBC, he was doing a course and my big fat bald head popped up on his Zoom. And he had no choice but to say hello to me. And that was my ambition. Like, I should have just left radio then. That was
circle. I bet he said, hello. Very often you'd cross it, you know, very often you'd see Andy at work and you'd say, oh, morning, Andy. Hello. And that's all you'd get. But again, if there was something that he wanted to pick you up on, you know, he'd tell you rather than, you know, get someone else to do it. I've never really experienced that.
You know, in 2009, you leave Radio Air and you go to the BBC, you go to BBC Radio Newcastle. Was that because Andy was there? Did he take you there?
Yeah, what happened when JK and Joel took over from me at Radio Air? This was 2009. And I knew that they wanted me out. You kind of get a sixth sense for it when they kind of try every trick in the book to get you out. You know, hope that you'll turn around and tell them to do one. Yeah. But I was wise to that. I didn't swear. What a good boy. I was wise to that, and I knew they wanted to get me out. So I just played along with it. And eventually the guy said, look, Simon, I know it's been a difficult time and we haven't seen eye to eye, but we're taking you off. We're going to pay you off for the rest of the contract, which I thought was great because I was having a thoroughly miserable time towards the end. It's funny, it started miserable and it ended miserably, but the bit in between was great.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the guy said to me, aren't you going to ask who's taking over the breakfast show when you leave? And I said, no, because Joel told me it was him and Jason. He told me about 4 weeks ago. That learnt him.
Now, of course, Simon, you are really good friends with JK and Joel. When they took your breakfast show, how did that affect your friendship with those guys at all?
What I really liked, I was always closer to Joel than JK. Don't get me wrong, you know, I love the pair of them. But what I really liked is that Joel had told me in advance that they'd been offered, because they were in London doing kids' TV, you know, it was a big deal to come up to Leeds, and they were made an amazing offer, and they could stay in the Malmaison and they'd have all their expenses paid. It was a great offer. And I said to, I remember clearly saying to Joel, "Joel, don't do it. You won't like it. It's the way it's being run at the moment," mentioning no names, "it's not a great place to work. I would say don't do it." And that wasn't me, you know, being precious or anything like that. I just know Joel. I said, he said, "Look, we've signed it. We're going to do it." I said, "Okay, great." And after about, they'd been doing it a couple of months, and Joel rang me. He said, "Simon, you know what you were saying about Radio Air and it wasn't a particularly great place to work? You got it wrong, mate." And I said, "Oh, I'm sorry." He said, "No, you got it wrong because it's 10 times worse than you said it was." And they couldn't wait to leave. And I think they only stayed there for about, I don't know, 8 or 9 months, didn't they?
That pair followed you around, didn't they, Simon?
Maybe it was a bit of both. Do you know, Joel is still one of my best mates. We talk very often. He still makes me laugh. How the man is still breathing in 2024 is a miracle of modern science. He won't mind me saying that.
No, he won't.
Were wild. We were wild back in the day. You know, goodness me. How on earth? But such a nice guy. And also, you know, one of these people that has kind of been inspirational in terms of my career progression and looking after me. You know, if I was a bit down or something, Joel was always there to cheer you up, you know. And I like to think that vice versa for me as well, you know. It was a great time. What was the question?
I asked how you got to BBC Newcastle.
Sorry, yeah. Have you noticed that I talk rather a lot? I do apologise.
Yeah, I love it, Simon. No, you don't
it's
dare apologise.
It's an affliction, mate.
It's great. It's great. It's
nice
to catch
up. Shut him up. Eventually went to BBC Radio Newcastle, which was a culture
shock. How was that? Because the transition for me from commercial to the BBC was interesting.
I was really excited because it was the BBC and, you know, you suddenly felt like you were getting a proper job, in inverted commas. But then I realised that you didn't have 20 minutes of adverts every hour to fill the time. You couldn't necessarily sweep three songs together and not do a link. And you actually had to talk a lot more and sound engaging, which was the challenge. But I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed doing that. I don't have a problem with talking. Have you noticed? Believe me, if I didn't like it, I would have gone. So, no, I genuinely enjoyed it. And it was more of a challenge, actually, to be able to talk more, but still be engaging, not to do long 10-minute, 15-minute interviews about, you know, knitting a jumper for a sheep. Because the sheeps don't like wearing jumpers anyway. So, you know,
hang on, Simon, technically, aren't sheep already wearing a jumper?
Oh, yeah, they are, aren't they? That's why they don't like it, because they're too hot.
Yeah, yeah.
Take that bit out.
That's my favourite bit.
Leave that bit in. It's just a different kettle. It's a different kettle of, I was going to say a different kettle of sheep. It's a different kettle of fish altogether. And, you know, most of the time I've really enjoyed it. There have been some challenging times recently.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's not just affected me. That's affected a lot of great people. Which is a shame, you know, but things do change and things move on. You know, the notion of every city having its own radio station, like, you know, for Hull would be Viking, Sheffield, Hallam, Air for Leeds, now seems rather old-fashioned, doesn't it, somehow? We've moved on. I'm not saying I like it, but now seems rather old-fashioned. Thought, why? Why were we so late to adopt that when America have been doing it for decades, everywhere?
We're having a party. Oh, yeah.
I want to talk about Pride Radio, because you mentioned before about how much you... I didn't realise you were a chart anorak, Simon.
Oh, I am. Terrible me.
So, I mean, you do a retro chart show on Saturdays on Pride Radio. I mean, is that the future for you, do you think?
I really enjoy doing that, and I enjoy putting it together. I do it all myself, find all the songs. And because I'm a chart geek, I like finding those songs that are great but don't get played on the radio. And I get tremendous excitement from this. It's a rather sad life. No, I just really enjoy doing it, and especially the cause, which I, you know, firmly believe in, obviously, the LGBTQ plus. I said it like I've never said that before in my life. It's a cause close to my heart, and I'm lucky enough to be able to sort of pick stuff. There's another station. We talked about Southport earlier, where I grew up. There's another station there called June Radio. And they've asked me recently, would I like to do this retro chart? And so I said, yeah, I'll do it. So only because I've never been on the air from where I'm from, as I said earlier. So that's that box ticked with June Radio.
Yeah.
And what a great way of meeting new people. You know, gay, straight, whatever, at Pride Radio. So that's why I'm doing them, because I just love doing it. And the pressure's off. You can kind of really enjoy it.
And of course, you know, we've talked about Pride there, Simon. You're still at BBC Newcastle. Yes. You still enjoying it?
Yeah, I love it, because I get left alone to present a show every Sunday. And it's called Simon's 80s versus 90s. What's not to love when you get to choose your favourite 80s song followed by your favourite 90s song and do it for 4 hours? And someone said to me, have you seen the listening figures? The BBC has a thing called the Sounds app where, you know, people can either listen live or catch it later. And they sent me this thing, and these 80s and 90s shows are 1, 2, and 3. On the sounds listing chart for us here in the Northeast.
Amazing.
So I just thought, you know, that's brilliant. It's only one show a week, but, you know, I put a lot of love and work into it. Like I said before, things have happened. Changes do happen, but I'm still enjoying it. I still get that buzz when I walk into the BBC and swipe my little card there on the door. I'm just about to go on the BBC, so I can't complain.
I'm just listening to you now, and just you've had some ups and downs, like everybody in the industry's had. I'm trying to work out in my head the highlight of your career.
Do you know what? That would definitely be when Catherine Tate didn't want to talk about the Catherine Tate show. You know those nightmare interviews that you sometimes get? So Catherine Tate was huge. I think it was one of the last interviews I did. Perhaps it's the reason why I left. She came in, and I was a massive fan of Catherine Tate. You remember Bothered? I Ain't Bothered and all that.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, the nan weeing herself and swearing. And I thought, oh, great. Yeah, she's coming in to, you know, talk about her new movie. But her PA came in before and said, oh, just one thing, by the way, Simon, when we bring Catherine through, Catherine says, could you not mention the Catherine Tate show? I said, well, every question I've got is about the Catherine Tate show, because it's the only thing that she's known for. Yes, but Catherine would rather talk about her new film. So anyway, red rag to the bull. First question. Are you still enjoying doing the Catherine Tate show? What's your favourite character? Oh, she gave me daggers. She gave me daggers. She looked at me. The rest of the interview was a nightmare. But I'm so glad that I did it, because what's the point in talking to someone like Catherine Tate when you can't mention the Catherine Tate show? Much the same as a certain pop star who would... most people are lovely when you do interviews. I'm just picking out a couple here. Most people are lovely, beautiful people to talk to. Was a very well-known pop star. And he just didn't want to be doing the interview. You know, it was one word answers to questions and kind of, yeah, well, yeah. You know, there was nothing. So I actually, halfway through it, I said, I'm really sorry. I said, can I ask you why you've put yourself forward for this interview? Because it really seems to me like you don't want to be doing it. And you know, and the very famous person, I'm not telling you his name, the very famous man said, I'm so, so sorry, Simon. I've been having a really shit day. I'm so sorry. Would you mind if we started again? And I said, no, not at all. Because, you know, people have a bad day, don't they? So we started again, and it was absolutely lovely. So I'm glad that I kind of challenged him on that. But I wouldn't say his name, because anyone could have a bad day, you know. Everything I do it for you. It could be reckless, and we wouldn't want that. Heavens above. Have you got it?
It took me a while, yeah. It just clicked. Yeah, sorry, Simon.
It's all right.
Good one, though. Very good.
It's all right. No, seriously, the highlight was getting into the charts with the wind-up CD and then going to sign these things at HMV stores in Leeds. I remember rocking up for the first one, and there was a massive queue, and I said to the guy that was with us, what are all these people waiting for? And I suddenly realised they were waiting for me to sign this CD, you know. I felt like it was the nearest I got to feeling like a pop star must do, you know, and it was absolutely wonderful. Great memories. And I don't want to sound blasé about it. And don't want to take it for granted, because at the time when you're doing it, it's kind of, when you're in the thick of it, it seems quite normal, yeah. But only when you look back and you think, God, people queued up to get an interview for some fool who was making fun of people on the phone, and then the bloody thing got into the charts. It's like, then you get a helicopter with your name on it. What? You used to say, what do you do for a job on the radio? Oh, yeah, you've got the Logicopter, haven't you? Are you a pilot? No, I can't fly. It's just got my name on it. I feel like a right knob. Well, I've got a Ford Focus with my name down the side. Actually, no, it didn't have my name. It had the station logo. One of those branded up cars, you know. And actually, when push comes to shove, you think, I don't want my name on it. I don't want people knowing where I live when I park it on my drive. I don't want people spotting me when I'm giving someone the V's because they've cut me up. So I said, I don't want my name on it, but I'll just have the station name on it. I remember being very proud. That was a proud moment. And there it was on the driveway of my house. And I got up the next morning to do breakfast, and someone had nicked all the wheels and put it on bricks.
Simon, can I just say thank you so much
for
two things. Two things, firstly, Simon. I'd like to say thank you so much for being on Crunch and Roll. And I'd also like to say thank you for entertaining me as I was on my way to college every morning, because you were incredible.
Oh, that's so kind of you, Foxy. Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure to come on this, because I've listened to it. I've listened to a lot of the people that you've had as guests. To be quite honest, mainly the people that I know, so that I can find out if they're going to say something about me.
Yeah.
Luckily, most of it's been great. And even the stuff about, you know, the suggested throwing of objects, which I explained earlier, still makes me giggle, because I just know I never did it. But it's just great. I love it. And I wondered whether you do this pod. This is me turning into an interviewer now. Do you do this podcast just because you love it, or, you know, are you making some dollar out of it? What's the deal?
We do it because we love it, and we do it because, well, for me personally, it kind of scratches my radio itch.
Yes,
you know, since I left the industry, but also. And this is where I think Simon will roll his eyes. Simon, the producer, who is the brains and the looks.
Who I've known for years, by the way.
Yeah. But I've said this a couple of times. It's setting people like yourself in stone in history. So we know, you know, we're getting all people like yourself and all these amazing presenters on Quantum Roll, just so they have the opportunity to tell people what, you know, about their careers, and it's all on tape. I don't know if tape's a bit retro, isn't it? But whatever it is, a podcast.
Makes sense for me. Has anyone ever said no? Don't want to do it. You don't have to say who it is.
We've had, there's been one breakfast presenter who was a little bit paranoid if other people, like yourself, was listening, but was paranoid what people might have said about him. but he will come on, but not at the moment. But apart from that, I think we've had one person, I think, who is management, who didn't want to come on. But apart from that, everybody's... Do you know what? Myself and Simon are genuinely blown away with the response to this. It's grown and grown as the series have gone on, and it's...
Because it's been a couple of years now. This has been going on.
It's crazy.
It's
crazy.
I remember when it first started. It's great to see how it's kind of evolved, and I love the graphics on the website, the little level thing when people are talking. What a lovely touch that is. And just nice to hear people stripping back from a lot of the kind of bluster and just being honest. And when people say things, you think, God, yeah, I remember what it was like doing that. And especially when it's people that you've worked with and maybe something you've forgotten about. You think, God, yeah, they're bloody right. Yeah, we did have to play Jimmy Ruffin every hour. Or whatever. Love Jimmy Ruffin, by the way.
Well, Simon...
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Foxy. The pleasure is absolutely mine.
I often ask the guests, I say, who would you like to hear on Crunchyroll? I'm intrigued by this. Who would you like to hear as a guest?
Can I have more than one?
You may. You can have your Viking royalty in my eyes. You can have as many as you want.
I'd like to hear the guy that gave me my first job in radio, who I think now works at BBC Radio Humberside, a guy called Phil White. Before that, he was a jock on TFM. I'd love to hear Phil White on it. And also, just because I am a chart geek, as we established earlier, have you ever done Bruno?
Not yet.
Oh, Bruno will do it. Bruno would do it. I've heard him do similar things. Have you asked him?
No, can you ask him for us, Simon?
Yeah, I will. Hang on, I'll just get my phone. Hang on. Hello, Top 40. Bruno, would you do Crunchyroll? Yeah, fine. Okay, I'll tell them, bye. There you go, sorted.
That's incredible. There we go. We've been messing around on Facebook Messenger. He's not replied. Just got you to do it. There we go. Brilliant. Well, Simon, would you be so kind as... Have you done voiceover work?
Yeah, I've done stuff for adverts and stuff like that, sure.
Have you? Yeah. Where would we have heard your voice before? I love this question. I sometimes slip this one in. Where would we have heard your voice then, Simon?
You would have heard my voice advertising double glazing in Hull, saying things like, it's not a wind-up. You can really get it for just £599. I remember they made a cardboard cutout of me and stuck it in the double glazing showrooms across Humberside. And that was a bit embarrassing, you know. But they paid me a lot of money. It tended to be stuff like that, kind of like sponsored stuff that was to do with the show. So, yeah, a little bit, but not too much.
As we finish on voiceovers, and please tell me you were either... And I will never forget these till I die. The two best advertisers on Viking were Big John from Clearly Cars.
Hello, this is Big John from Clearly Cars. Hi, sir.
Where basically, if you bought... I'll never forget the advert. If you bought a second-hand car off that guy, he'd give you a free cheeseburger. That was genius. And the other one was... And I did late on Viking, was Hugh Rice Jewellers' Gifts as Precious as Time.
Yes. Used to sponsor something called the Late Night Love Affair, didn't they?
Yes, I did that, yeah.
Late Night Love Affair with Hugh Rice Jewellers. It all sounded very glamorous. I don't know whether it was or not.
They still exist.
Do they still exist?
I don't know. I don't know if Big John does. Too many cheeseburgers. He's a goner.
Poor Big John. Yeah, never a good idea for the person that owns the company to try and do the voiceover for it. No. Rarely works, you know, rarely works. What do you want me to say anyway? Voiceover. What do you want me to say?
Simon Logan, would you please take us away with the end credits?
Yes. What are they? hang on, right. I've got it now. The end of the recording. Okay. You've been listening to Crunch and Roll with me, Simon Logan. Subscribe on your favourite podcast app and get every new episode as soon as they drop. Crunch and Roll is a 969 Media production presented by John Fox and produced by Simon Borosowski. I've got your surname wrong, haven't I?
Borosowski.
Everyone does.
Oh, yeah.
Viking FM, I wish you a happy birthday and I love you.
Bring back Foxy and Tom.